This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this Latin American edition of the program, the impact of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the migration debate, and the summit of the Americas. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. While Russia has criticized NATO expansion in Europe, it seems Moscow has no compunction about spreading its tentacles in the Western Hemisphere. Russia has long-standing ties with Cuba and has cozied up to Venezuela's authoritarian regime, on which the United States has imposed numerous sanctions. Officially, Washington recognizes opposition leader Juan Guaido, not Nicolas Maduro, as the country's legitimate president. Nonetheless, with fuel prices skyrocketing in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the Biden administration may reconsider its current ban on Venezuelan oil imports, which the Trump administration imposed in 2018, just days after several American officials met with Maduro in March. President Biden announced a ban on Russian oil imports. The Economist magazine says that the Biden administration insists it is not about to, quote, embrace Maduro, and that it remains very concerned about human rights violations. Although, in an apparent goodwill gesture, Maduro released two American prisoners who had been held hostage in Caracas. Maduro has also promised to return to talks with the Venezuelan opposition, according to The Economist. Analysts say that President Biden may not only want to restore Venezuelan oil imports for economic reasons, but also to pry Maduro away from its close ally, Moscow. Meantime, on the immigration front, the U.S. Supreme Court is considering whether to allow President Biden to rescind the hardline immigration measure imposed by his predecessor, Donald Trump, which has forced thousands of migrants, including asylum seekers, to stay in Mexico while awaiting hearing on their asylum claims. A ruling on the so-called Remain in Mexico policy is expected shortly after the administration plans to end yet another Trump-era border policy on May 23rd. According to the Associated Press, the decision to end Title 42, a public health order in effect during the coronavirus pandemic, which blocked migrants at the border from seeking asylum, is being challenged by 22 states. AP says it also faces division among many Democrats who argue that it is premature to lift the policy without having an ample plan in place to deal with an influx of migrants at the southern border. Well, we'll examine it all with our veteran Latin American analysts. Eric Farnsworth is vice president of the Council of the Americas and the America Society, and that's a leading voice on Western Hemisphere affairs based here in Washington, and Benjamin Gadan. He's deputy director of the Latin American program at the Woodrow Wilson Center, a think tank also based here in Washington, and both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Carol.
Carol, how are you?
Great. It's so great to have you both. I will see you perhaps in the studio in the coming days. But for now, let me first get Eric Farnsworth's view of the impact of the Russian invasion of Ukraine on Latin America. Eric, you know, besides Cuba and even Venezuela, where else does Russia have its tentacles? How deep are they? And do you see a potential opportunity in the wake of this invasion for America to sort of pry some of these countries away from Russia's grip?
Carol, it's an important question, and I think the first thing we have to say is to forcefully and firmly condemn what Russia is doing even right now in Ukraine. This is an immoral, totally unjustifiable war of choice and aggression against a peaceful democratic neighbor. So that's what we have to, I think, state up front in terms of certainly my own bias. But also, I've been somewhat disappointed at the lack of response from a number of countries in Latin America and the Caribbean in terms of condemning Russia's assault on its democratic neighbor. Some have voted, of course, to condemn at the United Nations or the OAS and made public statements, but others have either abstained or kept their commentary muted. And I think that's a real area of opportunity for Latin America to really show itself on the side of democracy and non-aggression and, frankly, the side of morality and international affairs. But having said that, the relationship that Russia has with a number of countries in the Western Hemisphere is longstanding. It's not going away necessarily, and we see it in a number of areas, certainly security cooperation, intelligence sharing, but also in the conduct of public affairs. affairs through information and misinformation through state-owned enterprises like Russia Today or Sputnik, through social media, that Russia has been very effective in promoting its own worldview across the Western Hemisphere in Spanish language particularly, which it uses to not just promote its own worldview, but frankly to disrupt the democracies in the Western Hemisphere and to try to wean some of the democracies away from not just the United States, but the idea that democracy is the best system that is worth pursuing. And we've seen Russian meddling directly in places like Chile and places like Colombia, which faces an election in a couple weeks, and in other places around the hemisphere. We could go more deeply into that. But the issue about what's the impact of Russia's aggression in Ukraine on Latin America? Well, the impact is broadly negative. It's scrambled energy markets, it's scrambled commodities markets, food, it's spiked inflation, and it's caused consumers around the world to have to really deal with something that they would prefer not to have to deal with, higher prices, scarcity, that sort of thing. But if there is a silver lining, and I hate to put it that way, but the IMF has just come out, frankly, confirming what I've been saying now for a couple months, and that is that there is some opportunity for at least South America, the commodities exporters, to fill that void that the rest of the world is facing on food and energy. So it cuts both ways, but obviously I think we all wish it wouldn't have happened in the first place.
Well, that's a terrific comprehensive answer. So turning to you, Ben Gadan, for your take on the impact on Latin America of Russia's invasion, the good and the bad.
Thanks, Carol. I mean, I think Latin America has the benefit of relatively minimal trade links to Russia. And so if you look at the reactions in the region, there's a pretty low cost in taking a principled position on the atrocities being committed in Ukraine. And indeed, I think if you look kind of broadly, you see Russia increasingly isolated diplomatically throughout the Western Hemisphere. I mean, just take the most recent vote at the Organization of American States, where 25 votes in favor of expelling Russia from the organization, where it had this special observer status. There was no one voting in favor of Vladimir Putin. You did have a handful of abstentions, and unfortunately, they include some large players like Argentina and Brazil. But I think it's hard to argue that Russia has substantial support in Latin America. You know, as Eric points out, where it does have longstanding alliances, it's in countries with fairly low influence in the region these days. I'm speaking, of course, of the authoritarian countries, particularly Cuba and Venezuela. I think that has left Latin America, I think, with a little bit more leeway to take the right position on the diplomacy here related to the war. In terms of the economic impacts, I mean, Eric's absolutely correct. There's opportunities for the commodity exporters, but even in those countries, there's real harm being done, particularly to the working class and the poor, who are not able to handle easily the increased costs, particularly for food and energy. So if you take a place like Chile, for example, it might have some benefits from its mineral exports, but it's a net energy importer. And so on balance, it might be harmed or certainly will not enjoy some really significant tailwinds from this conflict. We'll see kind of how that works out in places like Argentina, which is a major exporter of a lot of the food commodities and energy potentially that are very much in demand right now. I think politically, it's just an even more difficult moment for a region that already was seeing growth kind of return to the slow pre-pandemic levels after kind of a brief period of rapid recovery in 2021. And inflation was already increasing before this invasion, making the governability even more difficult. And so this is essentially the last thing the region needed.
So turning back to you, Eric Farnsworth, let's take a look at some of the authoritarian countries, particularly Venezuela. As I said in my introduction, it's not producing as much oil as it used to. Nonetheless, Biden had sent some of his envoys to Venezuela to meet Maduro in March. Do you see an opportunity potentially for a somewhat of a reconciliation between the United States and Venezuela without simultaneously strengthening Maduro because he is quite a tyrant?
Well, I think it's certainly a risky calculus that I personally don't see paying dividends. You know, I think there may be reasons to engage with the Maduro regime, but as an effort to try to wean Venezuela away from Russia, I don't see that as viable for any number of reasons. But I think there are bigger issues here. And one is the United States has to put our own energy security very high in terms of our strategic goals, as well as the energy security of Western Europe and Eastern Europe and others around the world. We can do a lot more in terms of domestic production. We can do a lot more in terms of working with our peaceful, democratic NATO ally Canadian neighbors instead of going to Venezuela. So there's a lot of options there, a lot of alternatives. The whole negotiation process with Venezuela has proven to be ineffective in the past. I see no prospects for that changing until and unless Maduro is frankly out of power in Venezuela. And, you know, what are the prospects for that? Well, that's a totally separate conversation, which we've had a number of times. But at the end of the day, I think that the political backlash that the Biden administration has received for this effort has slowed any particular interest. We'll have to see if it pays any dividends going down the road.
Ben Gidan, you served in the Obama administration. You know well how these conversations take place. What is your take on the U.S. foray into Venezuela, looking to reconcile, perhaps try to turn Venezuela from the Russian grip, at the same time benefit from oil imports?
Carol, I think the war in Ukraine, the desire for new sources of energy are factors. But frankly, the Biden administration came into office with the idea of using the leverage from this extreme sanctions regime to try to promote a political dialogue with Venezuela. So I don't think this posture is particularly new. I agree with Eric, it's quite controversial. And I think the politics are highly unfavorable, particularly in the run-up to the U.S. midterm elections. The reaction to the recent visit to Caracas by senior officials was ferocious and bipartisan. And look, I think Eric's right. There's lots of reasons to be skeptical about Nicolas Maduro's willingness to engage meaningfully in the negotiation process in Mexico City. But I think we may be reading too much into the energy side of this, or even, frankly, the geopolitical dynamics involving Russia's influence in the Western Hemisphere. I think the policy toward Venezuela is widely perceived as paralyzed and not achieving results. You know, there's a recent letter by many in Venezuela, it was also controversial, but supported by many in civil society, that said that the sanctions regime, as it stands, has generated leverage for the United States and the Venezuelan opposition. But absent the dialogue process, it's producing nothing but suffering in the country. And so I think there is this push to have some action that would use the leverage from the sanctions regime to try to promote some kind of serious conversations on humanitarian issues and eventually on issues related to the redemocratization of Venezuela. Again, I think there's plenty of reasons to believe that it will fail and plenty of reasons to believe that the timing is not right and that the regime doesn't feel sufficiently pressured and so that it's not likely to make serious concessions. But I think the context is broader than the question of energy or even U.S. detainees in Venezuela or weaning Venezuela off its relationship to Moscow. I think there's, you know, a real debate about how to most productively engage with Venezuela. And right now, the maximum pressure isolation policy is simply not producing results.
We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Castiel. My guests are Eric Farnsworth. He's vice president of the Council of the Americas in the Americas Society, and Benjamin Gidan, from whom you just heard. He's deputy director of the Woodrow Wilson Center's Latin American program. And they join me via Microsoft Teams. We're discussing countering Russian influence and strengthening U.S. ties with its southern neighbors. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal listener, Abraham Sharif from Liberia. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. Well, back to you, Eric Farnsworth. Let's turn to a domestic and foreign policy issue. And of course, that's dealing with migration. Let's talk quickly about this remain in Mexico policy that's under consideration now at the U.S. Supreme Court. Give us your take on the wisdom of removing remain in Mexico. What is the impact and what are the consequences of this?
Well, thanks, Carol. And, you know, it's interesting how this relates directly, in fact, to the Ukraine crisis that we've actually been talking about, because we're actually seeing a number of Ukrainian refugees and also Eastern European refugees show up at the U.S. border looking for asylum, and the direct result, again, of Putin's ambitions. So, you know, this has global impacts. But from the United States perspective, certainly Washington There's nothing more complicated, more politically sensitive, perhaps, than migration policies and politics. The Remain in Mexico initiative that was started under the Trump administration has proven to be very controversial, but the process of lifting it has arguably proven to be equally controversial. And so there's a real political issue here that the courts are trying to sort out. And in fact, the administration has indicated, as you said, a desire to lift the Remain in Mexico policy. You know, this is going to be sorted out politically, but one thing I would point to is the timing, because just a couple weeks after the date that the administration is looking to lift the policy, the president is going to host a number of leaders from the Western Hemisphere in Los Angeles for the next Summit of the Americas. The first time the U.S. has hosted this since the summit in Miami in 1994, which I personally was involved with earlier in my career, of course. And this is a real opportunity for the United States, but it's going to be a challenge because if indeed the policy of Remain in Mexico is lifted, Title 42 is perhaps lifted, then you have a scenario whereby a lot of observers are predicting a spike in migration toward the United States, just as the president is hosting Latin American and Caribbean leaders to discuss a broader hemispheric agenda. So the timing is going to be complicated, and certainly the opposition to the Biden administration will use this to their advantage. So I guess wrapping that all up into one succinct sentence, I think if the judicial process finds a way to delay the Title 42 removal until after the Summit of the Americas, they're probably doing the White House a pretty big favor.
Over to you, Ben Gadan, for your take on these two measures, you know, the Remain in Mexico, which requires asylum seekers to, as the policy says, remain in Mexico while their hearings are being prepared, which is scary for many of these asylum seekers because of the situation in Mexico, kidnappings and all kinds of oppression. And then, of course, the Title 42, which was a pandemic era ruling, which is set to be lifted on May 23rd. Which is angering many Democrats. So there's a political aspect because some of these Democrats are in border states and they don't understand the timing, notwithstanding the pandemic has subsided in many respects and that there's no more public health reason, presumably, for keeping this so-called Title 42 in place. How do you see all of these intertwining measures and the politics there, too?
A lot of the migration measures that the Biden administration inherited are inconsistent with U.S. values, arguably inconsistent with U.S. laws and international treaty obligations, and harmful to the U.S. global image. I get the politics of immigration are perilous, and frankly, there is a crisis at the border. I don't think that's invented. In March, apprehensions at the southwest border exceeded 220,000. And so I think there are legitimate fears, including from states in that part of the United States, of what the lifting of these measures might mean. And so it's not an easy option for the Biden administration to reverse these policies, notwithstanding, I think, some real moral and practical and legal problems with how they were developed and implemented. I guess my general view on this subject is I wish we would dedicate a little bit more of the debate to solving some of the problems that drive this migration in the first place. You did see the new administration come in with this so-called root causes strategy, this plan to spend almost $1 billion a year for 4 years to address the insecurity, the lack of economic opportunity, the governance problems in the region that drive people to make the very difficult decision to leave their homes and take an uncertain and expensive journey to the United States where they very well might not be welcome. And I have not seen the capabilities of the U.S. political system to really focus its resources and attention on addressing those drivers of migration. There's just a lot more energy that goes into debating some of the more hardline policies, both the wisdom and legality of these measures. And so I think leading up to the Summit of the Americas, there was just a big meeting that Secretary Blinken hosted in Panama City related to burden sharing throughout Latin America and ways that the whole region can address the roots of this crisis. I think we should all kind of do our best to focus at least some of our energies on that aspect as well. And there are frankly hard problems to solve, structural problems in these countries, including corruption and poor governance. But there are some, I think, you know, relatively low-hanging fruit. We need to feed people who right now are seeing worsening hunger due to the inflation that we discussed earlier, Carol. There's a need for greater resilience to climate change, which has worsened hurricanes and droughts, including in northern Central America. So I think there are measures that can be taken that would enjoy bipartisan support, that would tackle the migration crisis in a way that's a bit less politicized and maybe more feasible in the short term.
Turning to you, Eric Farnsworth, you know, Benjamin Gedan makes excellent points. The fact that we need to tackle the root causes, and the Biden-Harris administration has a plan for that, but that's going to take a long time, where Vice President Harris is working with the Northern Triangle countries to address the root causes. And in addition, Ben Gedan said, you know, we have a problem with immigration policy writ large, and that's a political issue, because if I recall, the Biden administration had a number of policies, or at least a policy to address our so-called broken system, but the Republican Party generally has shown a certain amount of resistance. So we're dealing with, you know, Title 42 and Remain in Mexico, which really are symptoms of the larger problem. So again, we're back to square one, where politically it benefits one party, particularly the Republicans, but not solely, to just kick the can, so to speak, and not really deal with the bigger issue of immigration policy.
Well, I think that's exactly right. But there are some huge issues here, Carol, that go well beyond Title 42 or Remain in Mexico or the latest congressional initiative on this or that. There are push factors, which Ben has already talked about, in terms of root causes, deteriorating societies, governance, economies that can't generate good jobs in the formal economy, crime, lack of education, the list just goes on, pandemics, etc. But there are also pull factors. And this is something that I think we in the United States should actually celebrate. The pull of the United States as a growing economy. Frankly, we're at almost full employment. We have jobs that can't be filled with the workforce that we have. We need workers. We need migrants to continue to grow the U.S. economy in a favorable way. There's also the idea that the United States is an attractive place to live. So, you know, there are definitely some pull factors drawing people from around the world to this country, and that's a good thing. And frankly, that's going to exist whether or not the root causes in Central America are ever addressed or not. So how can we address migration in a civil, legal, humane manner which addresses the needs of the United States and our economy and our values, at the same time growing and strengthening some fragile democracies in our neighbors to the south and elsewhere around the world, frankly? These are the issues that are really difficult to grapple with, and I think it's really a tough thing to expect that a fractured U.S. Congress and broken political system is going to be able to deal with those issues in a meaningful way. And so what happens is people focus on the immediate, they focus on the soundbite, they focus on the what shows up on the camera space, and that's desperate migrants trying to cross the southwest border into the United States. And I should also add, you know, the patterns of migration have been shifting. Mexican migrants are coming back to the U.S., whereas before that was minimized. Central America continues. I mentioned Ukraine, but we've also seen a major number of Cuban migrants now come to the United States, not via boat lift like we saw in Mariel in the 1980s, but frankly through Nicaragua and through the land bridge of Central America. And so these factors continue. They're deep, they're broad, and hopefully the meeting that Secretary Blinken held, as well as others, including the Summit of the Americas, will at least begin to chart a path forward that's meaningful and addresses the needs of us as well as our friends and neighbors to the south.
Back to you, Ben Gedan, because once again, we have this problem in this country whereby one political party benefits from kicking the can down the road, from not addressing the root causes of migration. What are your thoughts?
I'm modestly more optimistic about the politics of addressing the root causes of migration. It'd be naive to believe that before the midterm, there can be real political consensus in some of these immigration issues, or even afterward. But on addressing some of the causes of migration in the region, frankly, there's a lot of bipartisan support. If you look at the reaction of Republicans in Congress to the suspension of aid to Central America during the Trump administration, I think you saw a lot of negative reaction to that decision. If you canvass the foreign policy professionals on Capitol Hill, there's a recognition that no amount of coercive measures are going to slow migration meaningfully and sustainably, given the pressures on many communities in Latin America these days. I mean, as Eric points out, you now have Venezuelans traveling through the treacherous Darien Gap between Colombia and Panama. facing thirst and snakes and thieves just to make their way north to the United States. Haitians and Cubans increasingly traveling by sea to the United States. Mexicans traveling from the south of that country, in addition to the enormous flows of migrants from Central America. Unless conditions improve in the region, there's really nothing you can do to dissuade people from taking their families away from desperate poverty and violence in the hopes of a decent life in the United States. I believe the politics of addressing those issues are actually reasonably favorable if separated from some of the more narrow and controversial questions about policies at the U.S. border itself.
A conversation certainly to be continued, but for now, that's all the time we have on this Latin American edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Eric Farnsworth, Vice President of the Americas Society and Council of the Americas, and Ben Gadan. He's Deputy Director of the Latin American Program at the Woodrow Wilson Center. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.